It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Thank you to each and every one of you for listening. You're each treasured, valued. You have purpose. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And thank you to this team that I get to work with. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. On this day before Thanksgiving broadcast, producer Steve, I wish you and yours a very blessed Thanksgiving, and a blessed Thanksgiving to all of our listeners out there as well, because each one of you are treasured and valued. Thank you.
Well, just earlier today, in our pre chat, you were telling me what your plans are, and you are to be commended for taking on a small army like you are.
Well, I'm excited. It's a very blessed small army, but things do end up in somewhat of disarray with all of that, but I'm really looking forward to that. Thanksgiving is one of my most favorite holidays. I've always loved it, and I can't believe that we're at Thanksgiving, Steve. I don't know where this year has gone.
Don't even go there. And we joke about it earlier in the year, like say when the 4th of July gets here, it's like, how did this get here already? And I always tell you the same thing. I'm going to stop taking down my Christmas lights.
That way you're the first one on the block that has them up.
It's a good way to look at it. Yes.
For sure on that. Check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And I do thank each and every one of you for supporting us. And this Sunday on America's Veterans Stories, which broadcasts at 3 o'clock on Sunday, will be Marine pilot, Vietnam veteran, Bear Owen. And I highly recommend that you check that out. It is a rebroadcast of an interview that we've done, but it is a great interview and would highly recommend that you check that out. And we do have rebroadcasts of America's Veterans Stories, and they're different throughout the weekend. So we have our latest at 3 p.m. on Sunday, but there's another show that broadcasts at 10 p.m. on Sunday and then one on Saturday. And all of them are really great stories, producer Steve.
Our friend Charlie here at KLZ has actually figured out he did this on his own. I only found out about it after he put it in place, but an ingenious method of bringing three American veteran stories to the air on a weekend, and it's not the same one. So, this is, everybody wins on this one.
Well, and many times it's good to hear those stories again. So be sure and check that out. And Charlie's done a really great job with that as well. And I mentioned thank you to all of you who support us, and thank you to all of these different sponsors that I get to work with. And one of those is Hooters Restaurants. They have five locations. That's Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. As we're getting into the Christmas, Hanukkah season, the holiday season, getting together with friends is a great thing to do. And then, of course, Wednesdays are Wings Day. And if you buy 20 wings, you get 10 for free, and you can mix and match those. And that's for dine-in or to-go. And so highly recommend that. Instead of you cooking all weekend long, you could actually have Hooters Restaurants do some cooking for you.
The question is, are they chicken wings or turkey wings?
Well, there's our chicken wings, but there will be some turkey wings and some turkey legs probably to munch on the weekend as well.
Yes, yes. Hey, speaking of food, I'll tell you a funny story. Back in the 1920s or something, my grandmother developed a holiday dish, in the worst part of the Depression, and it was something that really caught on, although it was made with bare essential type things. So, later today, I'm going to be going to my cousin's place, and we were kind of, deciding who's going to do what. And he says, do you have the recipe for your mom's, whatever we call that dish? And I said, well, it's in my head. And he says, okay, good, you can make it.
And what is it exactly? Is it turkey leftovers, or what is it?
No, it's made for the big meal itself, but it's a kind, some people have bread stuffing and other people have potato stuffing. This is a combination of both because potatoes and bread were cheap.
Interesting. And what kind of spices?
sage and, you know, all those types of things you would think of, and celery and onion and whatnot. And again, it's caught on. New people who have come into the family over the years, they just, wow, I never had anything like that before. So it's a big deal.
Oh, it sounds absolutely delicious. And we've got a great show planned today, Steve. We're going to be talking with Bill Federer a little bit later here. And we'll talk about the pilgrims, what was going on in the 16th century throughout the world. It was a pretty treacherous time. It was not a utopia with all of the Indians here in North America or also in Central America. So we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of that kind of stuff.
You know, it's funny. We've had Bill on. He's become kind of our go-to guy on Thanksgiving because this particular area of pre-American history, he knows like the back of his hand. And what you just said about, you know, we take so much garbage from, you know, the left and the, you know, the progressives about how bad we were, really, you know,
trashing our imperfections.
Right. And the pilgrims were really nasty, yada, yada. And it's like, no, you need to know the real story about what was happening in the 1600s and maybe before that, that it was not utopia.
Well, and it's important that we understand the complete context of all this. And that's why things like the 1619 Project just is pulling out little snippets here and there. And their ultimate goal, I think, is to trash the American idea. And so it'll be great to talk with Bill about that. But I thought it would be good to have a quote today, Steve, from William Bradford. And he was born in 1590. He died in 1657. And he was one of the leading members of the Congregation of Pilgrims who came to North America aboard the Mayflower. He was a signer of the Mayflower Compact and the second governor of the Plymouth Colony after the death of the first, John Carver. In 1621, Bradford would hold this position for the next 30 years and was so influential that he was often referenced as the first governor of Plymouth and continues to be even in this modern era. And one of the things he said, thus out of small beginnings, greater things have been produced by his hand that made all things of nothing and gives being to all things that are. And as one small candle may light a thousand, so the light here kindled hath shone unto many. And that is William Bradford, one of the leading members of the Pilgrims. That, I think, is something that gives us great hope. Now, they were going through such difficult circumstances then, Steve. A quote like this, and just that I chose it because the light of one small candle, the light of truth, one little grain of truth, all those things can push back on the darkness, can push back on the lies.
It makes you think, it makes you think on a timeline, you know, start from nothing, you know, as they were at this point, and to the whatever the peak of our development was and our existence as a nation. And now we're actually starting to witness the deconstruction of it all and heading back towards nothing.
Well, and that is with that particular policy, policies of no longer, you know, all these basic things under the Mayflower Compact is where instead of kings governing us, it was this compact that perhaps we the people could govern ourselves. And so we are in a time now to reclaim those things back from then for our nation, because as you mentioned, we're deconstructing these great things, and it's important to reclaim those, Steve. What's your final thought on that before we go to break?
Well, what you just touched on just now, think of the Israelites, and they couldn't get their act together. You know, do we want a king? Well, no, we don't want a king. And after a while, you know, some time went by and said, yeah, we want a king. They couldn't figure it out.
But America was founded on this grand idea that individuals have rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And that's something to be very grateful for as we are looking at this Thanksgiving. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Bill Federer.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us to keep our independent voice on the air as we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And we wish each and every one of you, to you and yours, a very blessed Thanksgiving. We realize that we have so much to be grateful for. We've taken a lot for granted, and this last year and a half has certainly taught us that. But I am so excited to have on the line with me William Federer, Bill Federer, and we always ask him for our very special shows because he is a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, president of Amerisearch, which is a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage, and he's the host of this radio show, American Minute. It's broadcast daily across America, right here on Crawford Broadcasting, and he's on the internet as well. And his Faith and History television show airs on TCT Network on stations across America and via DirecTV. Bill Federer, welcome to the show.
Jim, great to be with you.
And I'd like to talk a bit about the Pilgrims. And I had a very interesting, a conversation on air about someone that had been at an early Thanksgiving celebration with friends, and the hostess, before they started, basically said something about the Pilgrims and that we shouldn't be grateful for what happened there because of the treatment of the Native Americans. And I'm not sure that she really totally understands the history of all this. Do you want to bite that off?
Sure, yeah. So she's mixing up what the Spanish... So Columbus discovers America in 1492. He takes four voyages, and he's trying to find his way to Indian China because the Muslims had just cut off the land routes to Indian China when they sacked Constantinople. So ironically enough, the people that hate Columbus and the Pilgrims need to turn one chapter back in the history book and see that the whole reason they set sail in the first place was Islamic jihad, conquering all of the Byzantine Empire and Constantinople in 1453. When the Spanish came over, Columbus was Italian. He was Genoan. And his second voyage, there was a bishop named Fonseca, and he saddles Columbus with 17 ships, 2,000 get-rich-quick Spaniards. They come over. They don't want to obey Columbus because they're Spanish. He's Italian. And so he leaves his brother in charge, and he goes off exploring some more. And his brother's trying to keep order, and these Spaniards are going off and treating the Indians bad and taking their gold earrings and stuff. Columbus basically caves to him and says, okay, you can more or less set up a feudal system over here like the feudal system was the norm in Europe. And so these Spaniards would get their own plot of land, and whatever inhabitants happened to be on the land, they were their serfs, but they more or less enslaved them. So that's terrible. Yes, Columbus should not have caved to them, but to blame Columbus for that is not a fair assessment. So then you have this enslavement going on, and there's a Catholic priest, very important guy named Bartolomé de las Casas. He spends his whole life getting the King of Spain to outlaw the enslavement of Native Americans, and he's finally successful. And when the greedy people can no longer enslave Native Americans, that's when they decide they're going to go to the Muslim slave markets in Africa, Timbuktu, Khartoum, the Niger River, where the canoe meets the caravan, and they would buy Africans from the Muslim slave traders and bring them to the New World. And so, again, Islam comes into the picture there. At 1619, what's that? Well, you had a Dutch ship that was trading in slaves, and it runs basically ashore in Jamestown, and they trade some slaves for some supplies. But they're doing indentured servant type stuff, and so those slaves are only enslaved for 7 years, and they're freed. And so that was the practice back then. There was the first African...
And Bill, let me just interject something there, because according to my family lore, my great-grandmother immigrated from Germany, and basically as an indentured servant. This would be during the Great Migration. And she agreed to work for a family in Omaha to work off her passage on the ship to get to America. And so I just want to make that note that this indentured servant thing, I mean, I kind of felt like that's indentured servant as well. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. So poor people that had no way to come to America, they would basically say, look, I'll work for you for 7 years, sort of like Jacob worked for 7 years for his, you know, wife Rachel. I'll work for you for 7 years in exchange for you paying for my boat ride, giving me a job when I get over there. I can learn the language when I'm over there. I can learn a trade when I'm over there. And then finally, after 7 years, I get on my own and I can have freedom. That was the norm for poor people to find a way over. In Europe, it was locked in with the ruling class that owned all the land, and then the merchant class, and then the peasant class. And so there was no upward mobility in Europe. So it was a very common method. Ironically enough, the first black man to own property in real estate was from Angola, and his name was Anthony Johnson, and he works for 7 years, gets freed, and he hires four slaves. Three are white, one is a black man named John Cassor, and after 7 years, John Cassor walks away from the farm and starts thinking, hey, I'm free, and he goes works for someone else. Well, Anthony Johnson brings a lawsuit in Virginia and wins to make John Cassor come back and be a permanent slave.
Wow.
So one of the very first permanent slaves in America was a black man owned by a black man. So it's what I tell people, it's not a hardware problem. It's a software problem. It's not the color of someone's skin. It's the behavior, that the actions that are going on in their head. And the gospel says to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So the battle is who gets to load the software on the next generation's brains. There's a critical race theory, which is counter-Bible. Ezekiel says that the children shall not pay for the sins of the parent, that the soul that sinneth, it shall die. And yet critical race theory says you got to pay for the sins of your parents. That's unscriptural. But so that's the slavery issue. I wanted to touch on that, but then the Indian issue. So you had Jamestown, which started in 1607, and they the purpose of their colony was a little bit confusing. There were some that thought they were just going to be there temporarily and find some gold. So the first boatload of stuff sent back from Jamestown was iron pyrite, fool's gold. I mean, they filled up the ship full of this stuff. They thought, hey, at the same time, you had Jamaica. It was captured from the Spanish by Admiral William Penn, the father of William Penn. And Jamaica was a place where the pirates could rob the Spanish gold and take it to Port Royal, Jamaica, and then take it back to England. And so the thought is, where does Virginia fit in to this? The purpose of the colony was, and it was a king-run colony. It had a royal crown governor, and they didn't always treat the Indians nice. That's different than Plymouth. Plymouth Rock, the Pilgrims came here specifically to start a new settlement, and they were nice to the Indians, and you had Edward Winslow. And so one of the Indian chiefs, Massasoit, is sick. And Edward Winslow goes and doctors him up, and he gets healed. And so there's like a 50-year peace between the Pilgrims and the Indians. And now the fine print was, if you doctor an Indian chief and the chief dies, you die.
So there was a little risk. Talk about medical malpractice there, huh?
Yeah, and so the Pilgrim experience was intentionally trying to be nice to the natives, the Native Americans. Now, so you had 10 years worth of Pilgrims, and then the Puritans came over. There's a civil war going on in Europe, and about 20,000 Pilgrims come across. They begin to be nice to the Indians, and then there's a new governor, I think his name was Josiah Winslow, and he doesn't really take the Indians' issues seriously, sort of brushes them off. The Indians, they don't have a concept of real estate. To them, air and water and land was sort of like everybody uses it. They didn't really have the concept of ownership of land. And so when the Europeans came over and they would say, okay, you know, we want to use this land, you know, some of them would say, sure, not realizing exactly what it was that they were doing. You know, the famous story is that Peter Stuyvesant, the Dutch governor of New York, traded some glass beads for Manhattan Island, you know. Now, William Penn, when he came across, he insisted on paying the Indians a fair price for the land for Philadelphia. And so the Quakers always had a really good relationship with the Indians. But so did the Pilgrims. But it was the Puritans, and it was this Josiah Winslow that didn't take their issues seriously, that you had Massasoit's son was Philip. And so he decides to have King Philip's War, or Chief Philip's War. And that's when about 8,000 of these Puritans get killed by the Indians, and almost wipes out the settlement there. But to blame the Pilgrims is not fair. They were a religious group. Half of them died the first winter. Squanto, it's a fascinating story, where the Pilgrims were religious. You had other people that weren't religious, and they would rob Spanish gold, but they would also come along the coast of America and lure some natives on board, lock them below deck, and take them to Spain and sell them into slavery. And a terrible practice. Muslims had slavery in Spain for 700 years. They still have it today in countries in Niger, Mauritania, and Sudan. But when the Europeans drove the Muslims out of Spain, unfortunately, they kept the Malaga slave trading market open in Spain. And so but these Indians were taken across. And so that's what happened to Squanto. He was lured on a boat, taken to Malaga, Spain.
And you know what, Bill, let's go to break. And when we come back, this story of Squanto is so powerful. And let's make sure that we have a complete segment for that. I'm talking with Bill Federer, and he is a radio host of American Minute. Great history all the time. A great thinker here in America. But before we do that, I get to work with a lot of great partners. And before we go to break, on the line with me is Lauren Levy. He is a specialist in the mortgage arena. He has Polygon Financial Group as his company. Lauren Levy, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Kim. Thank you.
And Lauren, as I reflect this Thanksgiving week about so many things I'm grateful for, I get to work with really great people. And you are a great sponsor of both the shows, The Kim Munson Show, as well as America's Veteran Stories. And I just want to say thank you.
Well, thank you. It's good to be a part of it.
Well, and we're doing a lot of important work for sure. And Lauren, as we're reflecting on Thanksgiving week, you really can help a lot of people, whether or not they're trying to buy a new home or refinance or reverse mortgage. And I know a lot of people are really grateful for what you've done for them over this last year.
You know, it's been really fun. And, you know, one of the side effects, I guess, of the whole COVID thing that's happened is that rates have remained really low, and it's provided an opportunity to help a lot of people save money, lower their payments, get into new homes, and nice to help offset some of this inflation, too, by saving people hundreds of dollars a month that they can use for fuel or food or other things like that that they may have struggled with. So it's been really nice to be able to do that.
Well, and in this inflationary time, it is really great to try to nail down some things that you can keep constant. And if you can lock in a low rate right now on a refinance or a new home, it's a great deal. So, Lauren, again, I just so appreciate you and your sponsorship of the show. And how can people reach you?
The best way is to give us a call at 303-880-8881.
And again, that's 303-880-8881. And Lauren Levy, I wish you and yours a very blessed Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Same to you and yours, Kim.
And we'll be right back.
Life is more than what we have in the bank. Mary Alpers and Steve Kruse with Three Points Financial understand that comprehensive financial planning is an important component for each individual to thrive and prosper. Three Points Financial provides tax, investment, and retirement planning so that you can achieve your financial independence. With so much public policy uncertainty, it is important to have the professionals at Three Points Financial working for you to navigate those uncharted waters. Check out ThreePointsFinancial.com to schedule your initial consultation to achieve your financial freedom. That's ThreePointsFinancial.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. And also those that my sponsor partners are great supporters of the show as well. And one of those is Kirsch Insurance Group. And they specialize in the Medicare arena. And you need to make any changes for your 22 plan by December 7th. And Kirsch Insurance Group works with most all of the carriers here in Colorado. And they also have proprietary software where they can put in your prescriptions and determine what your coverage would be in each of these different different companies. So you can really set yourself up for success and save yourself money. And you need to make sure that you do that very soon. December 7th is right around the corner. More information, go to iKirsch, that's iKirsch.com. That's iKirsch.com. And be sure and check that out. On the line with me is Bill Federer, William Federer. He is a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and president of Amerisearch, which is a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. And his American Minute is a radio show that is featured on a daily broadcast throughout America, right here on Crawford Broadcasting as well. And his Faith and History television show airs on TCT Network and also DirecTV. Bill Federer, before we went to break, you really addressed the history of how the Europeans came to America and just the different players in that. But you mentioned Squanto, and all of this, you said, is in a book that you've written, The Treacherous World of the 16th Century. And people can get that at your website, correct?
Yes, it's AmericanMinute.com. And it goes through what was going on in Europe that caused the pilgrims to want to come over in the first place, that it was one denomination per country in Europe, right? So Western Europe was Catholic, and then the Reformation starts with Martin Luther in 1517. But then in 1529, 100,000 Muslims surround Vienna, Austria, under Sultan Suleiman the Magnificent. They had conquered North Africa, which used to be Christian, right? There used to be 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa. St. Augustine of Hippo was from Carthage. Today that's Tunisia, but it was conquered by the Umayyad Muslims. Then they invaded Spain in the year 711 and conquered it all. They were finally stopped outside of Paris at the Battle of Tours in 732 AD. It takes 700 years to drive the Islamic occupiers out of France and Spain. And then the Turks convert to Islam and they conquer what is today Turkey. Back then it was the Byzantine Christian Empire. All seven churches mentioned in the book of Revelation were wiped out by Muslim Turks. And then the Europeans send help. It's called the Crusades. When they end, then the Turks conquer Constantinople in 1453. This ends the land trade routes to get from Europe to India and China. That's when Columbus set sail looking for a sea route. But in 1529, 100,000 Muslim Turks surround Vienna, Austria. And if they conquer Vienna, they can have a free route to conquer all of Europe, and Europe would have gone the way that North Africa would have gone. So it's a big battle. So the Holy Roman Emperor is the Catholic Holy Roman Charles V of Spain. A Holy Roman Emperor is somebody that has double duty. You take care of your own country, and then different electors that elect you to protect Europe against Islamic invasions. And so Charles V is trying to do both. And then the Reformation starts, and he spent several decades trying to crush the Reformation and couldn't. So finally he decides he's going to make a deal with the Protestants. It's called the Peace of Augsburg of 1555. This lets every king decide what's going to be believed in his kingdom. And so you have Northern Germany and Sweden are Lutheran, Switzerland Calvinist, Scotland Presbyterian, Holland Dutch Reformed, England was Anglican, and Italy, Spain, France, Austria, Poland stayed Catholic. And it was this concept in Europe that whatever the king believed, the kingdom had to believe. If you didn't believe the way your king did, you were persecuted, you fled. And that's what happened to the pilgrims. They're in England. They don't want to go along with the king's Anglican church. And they are separatists. And they are thrown in prison. They're in jail. Some of the pilgrim separatists sell their property, arrange for a Dutch ship to come along the coast and pick them up. The pilgrims show up a day early. And the women and children are in the boats, rocking in the water, and the little rowboats. And so they say, can we just wait on land? And the men are in the boats. Finally, the Dutch ship shows up, and the men row out, and they're stowing everything on the ship. But somebody snitched, and the British come over the hill and capture the women and children. And the Dutch captain says, I don't have any army on board. And he pulls anchor and sails away with the men. And you can imagine those wives watching that ship getting smaller and smaller and disappearing. For 2 years, they had those women go from one court in prison and jail in England to another. Finally, a judge says, you didn't do anything wrong, go home. They go, duh, we sold our homes. And so just to get them out of their hair, they put them on a boat, send them to Holland. They find out where their husbands are, and they're reunited. They're in Holland for 12 years. Spain threatens to attack. It was an 80-year war of independence for Holland to break away from Spain. And so when this is beginning to heat up, the pilgrims decide to flee again. That's where they're going to go, to Jamestown. They get blown off course, and they land in Massachusetts. They try going south, but there is a shallow area off the coast of Cape Cod. It's called a graveyard of ships. 3,000 ships have sunk off the coast of Cape Cod. The pilgrims almost sink, but the captain goes back to Plymouth Rock and says, everyone off the boat. The pilgrims say, we have a problem. There's no king-appointed person on our boat. The whole world's ruled by kings. King of England, King of Spain, King of Austria, the Muslim sultans, the Chinese emperors, the Indian Maharajas, the African chieftains, the Islamic sultans. Everything's ruled by kings. And here are these pilgrims saying, getting off the boat, and there's no king-appointed person. They do something unique. They give themselves the authority to start a government. It's called the Mayflower Compact. And it's in the womb of this little Mayflower is a polarity change in the flow of power. Instead of top-down, it's ruled bottom-up by we.
Wow.
And this covenant form of government becomes the model for the New England colonies and eventually the U.S. Constitution. Wow. That's why we look back to the pilgrims. But that first winter, half of the pilgrims die. There's 102 of them. And the next spring, they don't know how they're going to make it another year. And out of the woods comes an Indian named Squanto. And the story is he was kidnapped by some unscrupulous, English Dutch merchants and taken to Spain, sold into slavery. The story goes that some monks heard that these Indians were being sold, and they caused such a ruckus that the Indians were not sold, and they were given into the custody of these monks, and the monks took care of them and eventually freed them. And so Squanto was freed, and he hitchhikes his way across Europe, makes his way to England, and he's in England for like a dozen years. He's learning, working. Right, you can imagine this. Finally finds a ship to drop him off in Newfoundland, and then he finds another ship to drop him off at Plymouth Rock, only to find his entire tribe had died in a plague. So William Bradford says that a couple years earlier, a French ship had shipwrecked at Cape Cod, right? That those shoals, it's really dangerous. He said the sailors got ashore, but the Indians never left watching them and dogging them till they got the advantage of them and killed them all but three or four, whom they sent from one sachem Indian chief to another. And evidently one of them must have had an illness, and the Indians didn't have any immunity, and it wiped out the tribe. So as tragic as Squanto's kidnapping was, had he not been kidnapped, he most certainly would have died in that plague. But it was such a thorough plague that none of the other tribes claimed that land, and so it was sort of left vacant. And so the Pilgrims, in a sense, landed on one spot on the eastern seaboard that was uninhabited. But again, you can imagine that spring of 1621, and they're not sure how they're going to survive. And out of the woods comes Squanto with his loincloth on, probably, and he talks to him in perfect English.
Wow!
It's like, oh, you guys from London? Yeah, I used to live there. You know, the St. Paul's Chapel, the pub down on Wharf Street. You know, and he says, oh, this place here, I grew up here. I know this area like the back of my hand. Over the hill is a spring. He teaches them how to go down to the riverbank and take off their shoes and squeegee in the mud and catch eels and clams. He tells them that they need to fish. They go, we tried. He goes, no, these are salmon. They spawn. This river will be packed. He looked at the moon, says, okay, it's going to happen pretty soon. And then he taught them how to plant corn. They said, we tried that. He goes, no, you got to take a dead fish. You lay it over the kernel of corn till it decomposes. You got to guard it for 2 weeks to keep the wolves away. The decomposing fertilizes the soil. You get a nice stalk of corn. And then he shows them how to take the corn and shake it in a pot over a fire and make popcorn, right? Popcorn came from the American Indians. And then he teaches them how to catch beavers. And William Bradford says, neither was there a man among them who had ever seen a beaver skin till instructed by Squanto. And it took 40 years worth of beaver skins to pay off their debt for their boat ride, because they had to borrow money for their boat ride. And they had pirates. They even had one ship in 1625 with 800 pounds of beaver skins. And a Turkish man of war captured it in the English Channel, took it to Morocco, and sold the crew into slavery. And so William Bradford said, because of the ship taken by the Turks, all trade was dead. So even the Pilgrims had to deal with Islamic terrorism, right? But Squanto, most importantly, was their interpreter. And he put them on good terms with the other Indian tribes. So the Pilgrims did not experience the fighting and that Jamestown had in some of these other colonies. And so they had John Carter do a treaty with the Indians. As I mentioned, Edward Winslow doctored Chief Massasoit, and he survived, and that continued the peace. And but Squanto was able to arrange that first Thanksgiving, that the Indians came with their deer, and the Pilgrims had their cranberry sauce and puddings, and at the end of the day, the Indians rolled up in their blankets and slept on the ground. And the next day, they're still there. Well, the Thanksgiving goes on a second day, and they would do foot races and arm wrestling, and then it goes on to the third day. And the next year, William Bradford tells how Squanto died. He says they were trying to get around the shoals of Cape Cod in one of their little boats. They were exploring, and he says the waves were really rough, and it starts pouring down freezing cold rain, and they put in at a little island and build a lean-to, but they're all shivering. And he says, here Squanto fell ill of Indian fever, bleeding much at the nose, which the Indians take for a symptom of death. He bequeathed several of his belongings to his English friends, and then begged Governor Bradford to pray for him that he would go to the Englishman's God in heaven. So here he is. He's living with the Pilgrims. He's witnessing their faith. They're Christians. They're serious Christians. And his last request was, I want to go to your God. And so I believe that William Bradford prayed for him, and that that he believed in Jesus. So, but it's just a fascinating story of this providential taking care of these Pilgrims in the New World.
So, Bill, what was Indian fever? Do we know what that was?
Oh, it's probably pneumonia.
Okay. You know. Okay.
But I do want to throw in a comment. People say, well, those Europeans, they were terrible. They destroyed this perfect paradise in the New World. Not quite. You had Aztecs capturing neighboring tribes and taking tens of thousands of the captives to the top of their, you know, pyramid temples and ripping out their beating heart to the sun god and letting their bodies roll down, and they would be cannibalized. And Cortez's men wrote about this. And in more recent times, people said, oh, that really didn't happen. Well, 5 years ago, they're excavating underneath a building in downtown Mexico City to shore up the foundation. And they find towers of skulls, amphitheaters of skulls, thousands of them. You can go online. The BBC did a special on it. And there are even women's skulls and baby skulls. So this was not just captives of war. This was ritual sacrifice to their Aztec gods pre-Columbus. And then you read about the Inca Empire and how everyone was a slave. Everybody was had to work for Atahualpa, who was the delegate of the sun god. And then you read about, you know, these different tribes in, you know, the Cheyenne. They got the horse before the other Plains tribes did, and they wiped out thousands of other Plains tribes, Indians, before the Europeans ever got west. So it's human nature, and it's sinful. It's wrong. Yes, it did happen when Europeans came over, but it was going on pre-Columbus.
Well, and Bill, I think it is really important that people do understand this. There's this conversation that there was a utopia before the white man came to North America and South America. And it's important to have an honest conversation about all this, which is what we're doing right now. I'm talking with Bill Fetter. We're going to go to break, and we'll have our final segment. And we're talking about the Pilgrims and Squanto and what was happening at our founding around that first Thanksgiving. Before we do that, though, before we go to break, another shout out to another great partner of mine, and that is Castlegate Knife and Tool. They are located right here in Sedalia, Colorado, and they have a new pop-up store at the Castle Rock Mercantile during this holiday season. And they have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. So whether or not you are shopping for a chef or a sportsman or a collector, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. And check out their website. That is castlegate.com. Castlegate.com. We'll be right back with Bill Fetterer.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. On the line with me is William Fetterer. And he is he's an American author. And let's see, I had the whole thing right here, Bill, where I was going to. There we go. Nationally known speaker, best-selling author, president of Amerisearch, a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. You're also the host of American Minute, the broadcast right here on Crawford Broadcasting. And very quickly, Bill, if people go to AmericanMinute.com, they can order your books. And there's so many different great books about our American heritage.
Right, and the one we're talking about today is titled The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It. And so it goes through all of the situation in Europe that caused them to come over. It goes through the religious, the freedom of conscience. In England, you had to believe the way the king did. They had passed the Conventicle Act of 1664, different versions of it, but it's where if you had, you know, half a dozen people meeting in your home and you're talking religion without approval of the government, you're criminals. And the police would break into your house and would pull out a piece of paper and read this act. They later called it the Riot Act. and they would arrest
Read you the riot. Is that where that comes from?
Yeah, because they thought, well, you could be planning a riot. And so they would break up these meetings, but they were meetings where they were reading the Bible. And so John Bunyan, who wrote Pilgrim's Progress, they're dragging him out. And he says, better to be persecuted than be the persecutor. And he spent 12 years in prison because he believed in freedom of conscience, that the government should not force you to do some. They would write one of them. They put you in the Newgate Prison or the Tower of London where they did not feed you. And there's open windows with bars to the air, so you'd shiver in there, and you had to have some friend bring you a blanket or some food because they didn't provide it, and they didn't give you anything to write with either. And so these early Baptist separatists, one was named John Merton, they put him in jail and wouldn't give him, you know, anything. A friend brings him a bottle of milk, and instead of a cork, it had a wad of paper. And when the guard was not around, he unfolded the paper, dipped a splinter in the milk, and he wrote out his pamphlets. And it dries, it's clear. He folds it, puts it in the empty bottle. The guard takes it, his friend takes it home, unfolds the paper, and holds it above a candle. And the heat of the candle turns the milk brown. And he could read what he wrote and typeset it, and they're printing these pamphlets. And they're like, how's he getting it out of here? And so the early Baptists called it the milk of the word. And another one was a separatist, one of the founders of the Baptist faith in England, Thomas Helwys. He dies in the Newgate prison, and his pamphlet said, the king is a mortal man and not God. Therefore, he has no authority over the mortal soul of his subjects. If the subjects obey all humane laws, the king can ask no more. The king shall not be a judge betwixt God and men.
Oh, my gosh.
For men's consciences belong to God. So if the king can, if the federal government can stand there and answer for your conscience on the day of judgment, fine, believe whatever the government tells you to believe. But if the government's not going to be there on the day of judgment, you are accountable to God for your own conscience. Well, kings and totalitarian governments don't want you to have a conscience. They want you to obey their mandates.
Mm-hmm.
You just do what we tell you to do. Don't ask any questions. We don't care about any morals or feelings that you have on the inside. Just obey. Right? That's the definition of a tyrant. It's called a despot, absolute and arbitrary authority. Absolute means that the moment they say it, it's the law, and the arbitrary is there's no precedent for this. There's never been a mandate like this before. And so these pilgrims were like, no, we are individually accountable to God, and we're going to stand up and, king, you don't have authority to force our conscience. So these different separatists.
Well, I just have to say, Bill, I feel kind of like we're in deja vu all over again right now.
Yeah, and so you can begin to see that's why the pilgrims decided to flee to America for this freedom of conscience. And it's a fascinating story, and one of them, if we have time, is the Pilgrims' experiment with communism. And if you'd like, I can get into that.
Yeah, let's do. We've got time to do that. Oh, right, before we do that, though, you mentioned one thing during the break about how we got the name Caribbean. And I think that the fact in the last segment you were talking about the Aztecs that had sacrificed those they captured and rolled their bodies down the hill and they were cannibalized. So tell us how we got the name Caribbean.
Right. So the first trip Columbus took, he ran into the Arawak Indians, who were peaceful and friendly. And on his second trip, he came onto islands and they found human bones cooking in pots, and they began to discover, you know, gnawed bones and skulls, and found out these were called the Caribbee. And these were natives from, you know, Colombia, South America, and they'd come up and they'd go from island to island and depopulate the island, and they would, you know, cut off the boys' private parts and fatten them up in cages and eat them. Columbus took a couple of those boys to the King of Spain to show him. And they would, according to these reports, they'd, you know, have babies with the women and then eat the babies. And, I mean, these Caribbee were cannibals. And so the Spanish word for cannibal was Caribbean. So they called it the Cannibal Sea or the Caribbean Sea. And they were depopulating island after island after island pre-Columbus. So for those Arawaks, it was not a nice, perfect paradise. And that's actually how Cortez, with just 500 men, was able to defeat the Aztec Empire, because the surrounding tribes helped Cortez to defeat the Aztecs, because they didn't like their young men and women being taken captive and having their heart tripped out.
You think?
So some of the early French missionaries were captured. There is the ones that came down from Canada, and these French Catholic priests, missionaries, and one of them was captured, and they gnawed the meat off his fingers while he's all tied up, and then they let him out having to scavenge in the snow, and he finds his way to a creek, finds his way to a river, and then goes along one of the Great Lakes and finds the French trading post, and they take him back to Europe, and the Pope kisses his fingers, and then he gives him special permission to say Mass without fingers. I don't know how he did it. And then a few years later, he comes back to America, and he's killed. And it was definitely a brutal situation in America. When the Indians were at peace, they were at peace. When they were in their war mode, they were very much aggressive.
It wasn't utopia.
Isaac Horkey's Isaac Jock was that one's name. Jogues, Isaac Jock. And then there's another one named John Berbeuf, Brebeuf. He's a French Jesuit missionary. He says, "You must love these Huron, ransomed by the blood of the Son of God, as brothers." So, very courageous stories.
Well, they really are. Bill, we've got probably about 4 minutes left, and let's do, you alluded to this, but the Pilgrims' little dance with communism. What did that look like?
So they didn't have any money, so they went to investors in England to finance their boat ride. And these investors had a company, right? It was the London Company. Part, it was branched off of the Virginia Company. A company was where you had a bunch of rich guys pool some money and you pay for the boat ride, and they expected to be paid back, and they weren't sure quite how. They thought maybe gold, but if not that, dried fish, and then beaver skins somehow. So they wrote the bylaws for the Pilgrims, and the bylaws said everything shall be owned in common. Everything gained by cooking, hunting, fishing, trading shall go into ye common stock, and everyone's livelihood shall come out of ye common stock. And they tried it, William Bradford says, for several years by good and honest men, but nobody wanted to work. It was cold, it was freezing, your wife or husband just died, your kid died, right? You don't feel good. And so William Bradford says that the young man objected to doing twice as much work as the old guy, but got paid the same. The old guy considered it an indignity to be ranked in labor with the younger one. And he says, as for men's wives who are obliged to do service for other men, such as cooking, washing their clothes, etc., they considered it a kind of slavery, and many husbands would not allow it. And William Bradford said that we had to come up with a better plan so they wouldn't experience want. And so they decided to give every family their own plot of land. He said this made all hands more industrious. The women now went willingly into the field and took their little ones with them to plant corn, while before they would allege weakness and inability, and to have forced them would have been considered great oppression. So, gee, they tried owning everything in common, and they almost starved to death. Then they gave everybody their own plot of land, and everybody worked extra hard, and they kept what grew. So instead of, the big switch is from involuntary to voluntary. So is your neighbor taken care of because of a government system that involuntarily takes stuff away from you and then distributes it? Or you get stuff, and then the preacher preaches the scriptures about being charitable, and you voluntarily help take care of your neighbor. That's a very important lesson. You know, people say, well, the early church, they were socialist. No, the early church was the early church. Socialism is counterfeit early church, and the big difference is between the word involuntary and voluntary.
Wow.
The early church voluntarily sold their property and laid it at the feet of the apostles for the church to redistribute. They didn't have their land taken away, and they were forced to involuntarily put the money at the feet of Pilate for the Roman government to distribute. And the problem is, whenever the government distributes anything, there's a saying, he who holds the purse strings has the power. So the person that is in the government job, that is actually doing the distributing, he's tempted to want to give a little extra to his family and friends, and to hold back from somebody that he doesn't like. And before you know it, it gets discretionary. And he who dictates who gets what ends up being the dictator.
Mm-hmm.
So every experiment of people owning everything in common always ends up with a dictatorship. But the Bible, when they go into the promised land, every family is given their own plot of land. If you own land, you can accumulate stuff. The Bible called that being blessed. And then you can be moved upon in your heart to give away some of your stuff. That is called charity. So Karl Marx says communism can be summed up in one sentence, abolition of private property.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't own anything, how can you give anything away? How can you be charitable? What are you going to steal from somebody? Now you're a thief? No, God entrusts you with physical stuff so that you can express the spiritual love in your heart for other people, right, by giving away some of your stuff. It's a beautiful plan.
It is a beautiful plan. Bill Fetter, we are out of time. Thank you. There are so many nuggets of wisdom within this conversation, and I so appreciate it. And it's always such great fun to have you on for one of our very special weeks. So I wish you and yours just a very, very blessed Thanksgiving.
And it's all in this book called The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It, in case anyone's interested.
Sounds like a good Christmas gift to me. So, hey, Bill Fetter, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay. And our quote for the end of the day is, all great and honorable actions are accompanied with great difficulties, and both must be enterprised and overcome with answerable courage. And that's from William Bradford. So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.